I have said to people when they ask me if this Capitol crumbled to the ground, the one thing that would remain is our commitment to our aid, and I don't even call it aid, our cooperation with Israel. That's fundamental to who we, fundamental.
35 years ago, I said, you don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist, and I'm a Zionist. And by the way, you don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist.
I have the high privilege and distinct honor of presenting to you the Prime Minister of Israel, His Excellency Benjamin Netanyahu.
I want to thank you, Democrats and Republicans, for your common support for Israel, year after year, decade after decade.
Welcome back to an episode of Our Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have Dr. E. Michael Jones back on the show. Of course, Dr. Jones is the editor of Culture Wars magazine, author of many books, including The Dangers of Beauty, The Conflict Between Mimesis and Concupiscence in the Fine Arts, and the most recently published The Holocaust Narrative. Dr. Jones, how are you doing this evening?
Good, Tim. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Well, here we are. We're early spring now. Now, this has been a thing, I think... Well, it's been a thing for the longest time, but I noticed this as early as late May last year when the White House announced that it was having this, a conference on to combat anti-Semitism, and it declared it would a whole government approach to combating anti-Semitism. I thought it was hysterical then, but then October 7th occurred, and you would think the whole world was changing. Hamas had this one-day raid, took some hostages, but then this unleashed a reaction from Israel where they have destroyed virtually every city in Gaza, created almost 2 million refugees. I think the death toll ranges anywhere from 30,000. I've seen numbers topping 100,000 because a lot of bodies aren't being counted, and the assault continues. It's seems to me an obvious ploy to ethnically cleanse Gaza. Jared Kushner is now talking about developing beachfront property there.
Yeah.
Boy, they really don't know themselves, do they? And I also, a couple articles were published last month, one in Time magazine cover story, the new anti-Semitism, and then there was the Atlantic cover story, the golden Jewish age in America is ending. And did you get a chance to read those pieces?
I did, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So what do you think?
Well, it's typical whining, I mean, this is... They have become more and more disconnected from reality as time has gone on. So we're supposed to feel really bad about these poor University of Pennsylvania students or Berkeley student or wherever it was, and ignore the fact that the Israelis are killing women and children. They're out of touch with reality. Why? How can you write an article like that and expect to be taken seriously? This whole problem has accelerated considerably, especially since those articles were written, because just this past week, we had a huge acceleration with the whole Candace Owens story, where she is basically going to the Daily Wire, and she's got a little niche. She's going to be the black conservative. That's a niche that's been there for a while. She's the lady black conservative, so that's good. But apparently she's not staying in her niche. She's not staying in her lane. And she started talking about the fact that this rabbi has been stalking her. And she said that he was filth is the word she is, because he sells sex toys with his daughter. And she was really appalled by that and started talking this way. Now, we had already gone through this with Candace on the Daily Wire about a year ago when she sided with Kanye and Jeremy Boring decided he's going, you know, we pay her to have opinions. As long as she doesn't violate the law, everything's fine. Well, she didn't violate the law this time. She just got into a really intense discussion with a rabbi. It wasn't Shmuley. It was another rabbi, Barclay, and the guy just made a complete fool out of himself by just his condescending attitude, but also the demands that he made. He demanded that she see October 7th as the worst catastrophe in human history.
Yes.
And if she didn't do it, she was an anti-Semite. I mean, this was getting over the top here. The demands... They are losing control of the narrative and they start screeching more and more. So at this point, Candace hit the nail on the head when she said, basically, who gave you the right to impose your religion on me? I have my own religion. You got yours. And then he's trying to explain to her why that is the case, why she should do that. And he makes a fool out of himself. Well, there's nothing wrong with what she said. But she touched the third rail at the Daily Wire and she got fired. So then it got even worse. It's gotten worse now. So Shmuley has come back on, behaving abominably.
That was the rabbi that she had a run-in with. That's the rabbi she called filth, right?
Yeah, that's the guy who's involved in selling sex toys. He gets involved. He's calling her a Nazi. He's been campaigning for years to get her kicked off Daily Wire. But the situation is that, well, wait a minute. I thought you said that you had to break the law to get kicked off. No, what happened here? There was a really revealing moment when she was on with the debate with Rabbi Barclay. This rabbi says, well, we're both conservatives, aren't we? Well, what happened here? Ben Shapiro blew up conservatism. He finally took it to its logical conclusion. He blew it up. There is no such thing as conservatism anymore. Okay, because what you had was before these kind of obsolete categories of liberal and conservative, which really go back to the post World War II period.
Mm-hmm.
This is when England was on its last legs. There was a heavy, socialism had taken over England. There was a heavy government involvement in the economy, and they were bankrupt, and they were trying to look for some type of solution. And at this point, you have the emergence of the Austrian school. And I think it was von Hayek who wrote the book called The Road to Servitude. At a time when there was the Soviet Union, when there's socialism in England, where there's, you know, big government presence.
Yeah, yeah. During the war. I think it was during the war they wrote it, 1940. Road to Serfdom, yeah.
Yeah, that basically, yeah. You have the war economy, and then it ends, and you still have this residual war economy, that where there's heavy government involvement, blah, blah, blah. So you want to debate, well, that's 1947. The issue now is not liberal conservative. You have both parties agreeing basically on one thing, and that is the acceptance of Jewish hegemony over our culture. So the only political issue now is, do you accept Jewish control of our culture or do you reject it? Okay, that's the issue. That's the only issue. And the problem is no one in the political realm is addressing it. No one is addressing it because the Jewish lobbies from the ADL to IPAC totally control the political process on a state level or a national level. So at this moment, you have Kristi Noem, who was involved in an adulterous affair with Corey Lewandowski, passing the most draconian hate speech anti-Semitism law in the union for a state that has 347 Jews. What's going on here? Well, it's a combination of blackmail and ambition for higher political office, I think, because she's pretty, and I think she aspires to be Sarah Palin 2.0 at this point, maybe become vice president candidate with Donald Trump, whatever. It's completely out of touch with the reality of the situation. So at this point, guy by the name of Klavan. It's the first time I ever heard of him. I thought he was a Jew, but apparently he's a Jew who converted. And he goes on, jumps into the debate, and says that anyone who uses the term Christ the King is an anti-Semite. Well, that lit up the internet. That lit up the internet for sure. So the number one...
isn't there a Catholic feast day to that effect?
The number one trend on Twitter now is Christ the King. So what happened? So I had to take this advantage because we go way back, Tim, you and I. We go back when we're both a little bit wary of talking about things like this in public. And now you can't avoid it. The Jewish question has become inescapable. Mm-hmm. It has become an inescapable part of public life on the internet now. And we're going to have to face up to it and deal with it. Because they can't, they continue. The Jews have not gotten the memo. Everybody hates you. The entire world hates you because of your behavior in Gaza, because you're always doubling down. You never say you're sorry. You never apologize for anything. You're always the victim. You know, the Jew cries out in pain as he strikes you, as the Polish proverb goes. Everybody was tired of it. We've had enough. And Candace was simply the lady who finally gave expression to these feelings. And I personally don't think that she wanted this fight. I think she wanted to be the black conservative lady. But the force of the events, the chain of events, the zeitgeist forced her to take that stand against Barkley and basically frame the issue, which is basically, who gave you the right to impose your religion on me? Who gave the Jews the right to impose their religion on the Christian population of the United States of America? That is the question that needs to be answered right now.
Yeah, it was very similar to what you said. I think it was last year or the year before, after the Dobbs decision, that the Roe v. Wade was imposition of Jewish values on America, and abortion is a Jewish value, and that's why hundreds of organizations sued. There's someone suing down in Florida saying if you ban abortion or violation of their religious freedom, and you said this was an imposition of Jewish values, imposition of Jewish religion on the American people. And Candace Owens kind of picked up on that, probably, I don't know, inadvertently, or just some, I don't think she was aware of your argument, but she made the same identification when Rabbi Barkley was imposing his views on her. It was she made that similar observation.
Well, it goes on and on and on, like Klavan's imposing his interpretation of the Bible on everyone else. It was like when I dealt with that guy, Michael Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he starts off, we're just going to have a little discussion here. And then you come to 1 Thessalonians 2, which I brought up. The Jews are the people who killed Christ, and they're enemies of the entire human race. So he says to me, well, that really, they're only referring to Judeans. What? I said, look, I know the Greek. The Greek is oi judeoi. Okay, it means the Jews. Okay, but once again, you got a situation like if you don't accept Rabbi, or he's not a rabbi, Michael Brown, actually, you see, he's a converso. His job is to keep the evangelicals on the reservation, the Zionist reservation. But if you don't, if you disagree with the Jew about his interpretation of the New Testament, you're an anti-Semite. So he calls me an anti-Semite because I disagreed with his interpretation of 1 Thessalonians 2 based on a cockamamie explanation of in the revised in the standard, one of the English translations, they use the word Judean, as if we can't, as if we don't know what the Greek word was. This is exactly what came out in that exchange with Klavan. Klavan is now claiming, first of all, I got into a big, dispute here because, first of all, I thought he was a Jew. I didn't know who he was. He certainly talked like a Jew, sounds like a Jew, looks like a Jew. And it turns out he had converted. He's an Episcopalian now. And so they're saying, well, I thought you said if you got baptized. Well, I did say that. And I'm saying, yes, baptism will remove original sin and remove actual sin. But it doesn't change your habits. It doesn't change the way you were raised. And the point of conversion is that you should not bring your old bad habits into the church with you. And one of the oldest bad habits that Jews have is denouncing people as anti-Semites. It's the biggest character flaw they have.
And isn't there a convert named Cohen who's putting a disclaimer on the Gospel of John?
Yes, this is a lady by the name of Rebecca Cohen.
Okay.
How out of touch the Catholic Church is. So when we go to Holy Week services.
She's Catholic, right?
Well, that's what I heard. I heard she converted. Her name is Rebecca Cohen.
Now, that's it's a Jewish name, but yeah.
Jewish to me. Now, okay. First of all, we have two options. Either she's still Jewish, in which case, why is she telling Catholics how they should not listen to the Gospel of St. John?
Yes.
Secondly, she might have converted to Catholicism, which maybe had something to do with the fact that she's a spokesman for the National Conference of Catholic Bishops.
Yes, you'd think.
If you did convert, Rebecca, stop talking like a Jew, okay? I mean, baptism is not magic. It doesn't change all of your bad habits. It's like talking about Michael Voris, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
The fact that you have all those gay cruises in your past that damage your soul in a way that heterosexuals simply do not understand. Okay? And that didn't get erased. All those bad habits and the damage they did to you is not going to go away by your conversion. You still have to work on that stuff. Your sins can be forgiven, but you still have the effects of sin that you have to work through. And he, didn't want to do that. He wanted to go from, the big guy on the gay cruise to a spokesman for the Catholic Church with nothing in between. And it blew up. And not only once, but twice it blew up. And so the same thing is true of Jews, Jewish converts. Okay, and I know Jewish converts who are sensitive to this. Like, I can't change the fact that you used to eat gefilte fish and whatever. You like bagels with lox and cream cheese. I can't change that fact. That's the way you grew up. But there are certain things that you're going to have to change, because if you're not going to change them, then don't become a Catholic. The Jew, Pfefferkorn, it's in the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, the whole chapter on Reuchlin and Pfefferkorn. Pfefferkorn was a Jew who converted in the late Middle Ages. And he wrote a really touching kind of testimony. And it sounds like Yiddish. It sounds like Yiddish or Middle High German. But anyway, it's touching because I read the original. It's not High German. It's not modern German. But he said, if I were still taking usury, I'd still be a Jew. It was clear. He understood clearly you cannot engage in these immoral practices and claim to be a Catholic. If you're going to persist in your bad habits, don't convert. Don't convert, because then you drag your bad habits in. And this is precisely the problem we have now with people like Mr. Klavan, who wants to tell Catholics now how they have to read the Bible and they can't use the term Christ the King, or Dawn Goldstein, who denounces fellow Catholics as anti-Semites left and right. And
Well,
so.
it's particularly a problem because if you're going to police Catholicism as a convert from Judaism, then your position is policing Catholicism for anti-Semitism, and where the Catholic Church is supposed to maintain the moral order, engage in the culture war. One of the big impediments to fighting effectively in the culture war is addressing Jewish power. So if you're obsessed with anti-Semitism, you're neutering the church's ability to fight these to confront these issues and maintain the moral order
That's right.
and promote
And
the faith. Yeah.
this is obvious. This is glaringly obvious when it comes to LifeSite News. Now, LifeSite News, John Henry Weston just he posted something. LifeSite News stands for Judeo-Christian Morality. Well, wait a minute, John Henry. What's the Judeo-Christian position on abortion? LifeSite News is about abortion. Well, wait a minute. There is no Judeo-Christian position. The Jews think it's a fundamental value, and the Catholics think it's an abomination. So there's no position. You're seeing this whole thing, the failure to address the Jewish issue is breaking all these categories down. They're obsolete categories. And that's the problem. You're trying to fight the culture wars with
Well,
Catholics.
yeah, it sounds reductionist and simplistic, I guess, but yeah, the primary issue, the most important category we have now to understand our political problem, our cultural problem, today's crisis is, are you willing to address the reality of Jewish organized Jewish power or not? And if you're not, you're not in the game.
That's right. That's exactly the point. That's exactly what Candace Owen discovered.
But the thing with Daily Wire reveals is Daily Wire is supposedly conservative, right? Well, Candace Owens didn't say anything that wasn't conservative. She's very conservative on all those issues, all those culture issues. So what got her in hot water? The Jewish question. So then
Right.
it's obviously it's a Jewish front to keep conservatives on the reservation.
Exactly what they revealed.
Yeah,
That's exactly
narrow
what
the political debate. Keep it away from these issues.
That's right. She did nothing that could have led them to terminate her contract. Nothing. She
What's not conservative about being critical of Israel, ethnically cleansing Gaza.
That's right. That's exactly the point. But that's exactly the point that they cannot make. It's like Ben Shapiro cannot do this, cannot not do this. One of Aesop's fables is the woman who became a cat. No, I'm sorry. The cat who became a woman. Okay, and the woman's lying in bed and everything's fine, and suddenly she sees a mouse and she jumps up and runs after the mouse. And the moral of the story is nature will out. Well, that's the best Ben Shapiro. He's the Jew who became a conservative. It's like the cat who became a woman, and everything's fine until you touch the third rail and start talking about Jews or Israel in a way that he doesn't like, and then he jumps out and tries chasing the mouse. He can't help himself. He can't help himself. Now there was a Danny Heifung did an interview with a guy named Loki. I don't suspect he's a Palestinian. He sounded like a Palestinian, but you can't tell by the name. Who was going into great detail about Ben Shapiro's links with Israeli intelligence and Jared Kushner and all this type of investment and where the money's coming from? Well, that's all obvious now. It's
Yes.
obvious because Ben made it obvious.
Yes. Another issue that another I guess incident or one story that kind of highlighted this story or this reality was when Donald Trump well, Jonathan Pollard was pardoned and Donald Trump allowed him to leave and go home to Israel. And he was received as a hero by Benjamin Netanyahu on the tarmac as his airplane landed on Sheldon Adelson's personal jet. He was flown over there. Okay. And I was at a family gathering. We were talking about this. And I asked a brother of mine, I go, so Israel's our ally. Yes. An important ally in the Middle East. Yes. So our interests in Israel, are they aligned? Yes. Well, how do you explain Jonathan Pollard being received as a hero in Israel then? He's a traitor to the United States. And I couldn't get an answer.
I couldn't get an answer. It's your brother in the military?
No, he's just a conservative.
Okay. Absolutely dead 100% against ever pardoning Jonathan Pollard. and Trump did that, disregarded them, to appease Netanyahu, to be the most Jewish president in human history. And then when push came to shove, Benyamin rushed out and endorsed Biden at a critical moment where an election should have been contested. So that, and I don't think he learned anything, though. He just said, well, God, the Israelis have to finish the job. What's that mean?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I mean, is this like the theology of Kid Rock here? Can of beer in his hand, the Bud Light that he used to shoot up with his rifle. Now saying, are they going to kill 30,000? And if that doesn't, they're going to kill another 40,000. And wait a minute, this is crazy. Wait a minute, why aren't you banned from the internet? Oh, I guess it's because it's Palestinians you're killing. Now, if you came on and said they should kill 30,000 Israelis, well, that's different because, they're real human beings. And what are they, Palestinians? They're subhuman, aren't they? This is the way the rabbis talk. There are rabbis, another guy, Alexander Croak, on another podcast. I think it was Judge Napolitano, talking about the rabbis who say that to the troops, they give these little sermons in which they say, tell the troops, you have to kill the children because they will grow up to be soldiers. Obviously, they're not planning to appease or talk to these people. They will, so kill them as children. And by the way, you have to kill women too, because they will give birth to these children. This is outrageous. And so we have to draw some conclusions here. The people who believe this are not fit for any form of government. If I got into trouble here, okay, because I said, apartheid. And I said the Israeli, this is another podcast. Again, this is a Palestinian. I think he's a friend of Norman Finkelstein, saying, well, we have to rethink this whole two-state solution thing. These people do not deserve to be in power. And he said, if they were removed, apartheid was removed, then why can't Zionism be removed? And I said something like that. Immediately, everybody jumps in and starts saying, well, it takes, what about what happened after blah, blah, blah. I didn't bring this up to either endorse or reject apartheid. I'm just giving you that as an example
Yeah.
government that was removed from power because they were odious in the eyes of the world. Now you can debate that. If nothing compares to the odium which has now attached itself to the Israelis, nothing comes close. They are.
Yet you have these articles in Time where completely self-serving and solipsistic. There's no introspection in these two. It's Franklin Foer, who's a staff writer for Atlantic, and who was it for? Noah Feldman. And I just read these articles. I said, this is just exactly what I expected. I thought there would be something more sophisticated in these pieces. And it's all about how victimized they are, how Jews have been so influential in the United States and in progressive causes. And in the same in the same breath, they admit to all the things that they're responsible for, taking credit for it. But then it becomes a conspiracy theory trope if people look at the very things that they're bragging about, promoting, like gay rights, LGBTQ rights, feminism, so-called human rights. Well, these things are debatable and controversial issues, and so you are behind all these things. And then it's then if you say they're behind these things, they say, well, that's an anti-Semitic trope or conspiracy theory, you
Yeah,
know?
I mean that World Jewish Congress sponsored video,
Yeah.
where this girl comes on and she says Jews are always right. How fatuous can you be? I mean, really, they're no self-aware. And then she goes on to this litany of everything I complain about, like from abortion to Zionism. And we're all, wait a minute, honey, you've lost contact with reality. There are people out there who do not agree with you. And your only response is to call them anti-Semites. This is not working. This is not working anymore.
And they can both authors, I think, condemn populism as being inherently populism, therefore democracy being anti-Semitic. Jews are afraid of democracy. Then at the same time, they say they're defending democracy. It's like Because a people have a problem with how they behave. So it's expressed in populist politics. You know, that dates back to the 1930s with Father Coughlin, who was a real conservative, really. So.
I think that America First was the true American conservatism. And I think we're heading back in that direction now because they blew up the other one. This is what happened last week. They blew it. I've been saying they've been blowing it up for years, but this is like the definitive explosion. This is totally irrelevant. The distinctions you're making between liberal and conservative are totally irrelevant.
Well, Dasha, if you had a similar scandal as Daily Wire did back in 1991 when Buckley fired Joe Sobran and cleared National Review out of conservatives, Sobran was a conservative. So what was he being fired for?
Yeah, because the Jews yanked Buckley's chain. That's why.
Yeah. It
That's
wasn't a conservative dispute. It was over Jewish influence and power.
That's right. And now it's become so, it's much worse now. That's over 30 years ago now. And there was some sense in which that Joe Sobran was expelled into the outer darkness, never to return. Although he did, I mean, he had to do his own newsletter at that point, but he was expelled. The Jews went after him. He didn't have a column, and he had a syndicated column before that until, forget the lady, one of these obnoxious Jewish ladies went after him, would go behind his back to the editor, and they would put pressure on him. So that was taken care of. But it wasn't because it's only gotten worse.
Well, in these articles, they deny that there's a network of Jewish organizations that can have you canceled and expelled and fired. And this is, I mean, it goes back to dynamic silence, in the media post, even before World War II. I mean, Charles Lindbergh faced an assault because of his activism for American First. His wife, Anne Murrow, talked about how terrified she was of the of living with this, with her husband standing up for what he believed in and what it meant for them socially. Obviously, there was something that, even at that time, all the radio stations and newspapers were Jewish controlled, and key journalist, what was it? Who was it? Walter Winchell and things like that guys like that would go after him, and they were all working for Israel. Then Israel didn't exist, but there was a Jewish power structure. There was American, there was the AJC, and there was Rabbi Stephen Wise, who was meeting with the president and all that. Bernard Baruch, the Baruch administration was full of them. I mean,
The power
key.
Morgenthau had over Roosevelt
Yes.
was extraordinary. But as I said before, that the turning point came when the WASP, when the Christians stood up to Morgenthau and basically got the Morgenthau plan dumped to, when they realized they were going to starve the Germans to death, they decided Herbert Hoover stepped forward and said, "This isn't Christian, this is Semitic vengeance." Patton was talking this way, the other members of the cabinet, and they won. Basically, Morgenthau overplayed his hand. He could do no wrong when Roosevelt was alive, but when Roosevelt died, he went to Harry Truman and demanded to be included in the Quebec Conference team. And he said, "If you don't do it, I'm resigning." And Harry said, "Well, see you later." And that was the end of it. And at that point, so I keep wondering, is there going to be some type of research? One of the straws in the wind is the fact that Victoria Nuland got kicked out of her
Yes.
at the State Department. That's a good sign.
Did you see also this latest maneuver for the for them to take over TikTok, the Jews to take over TikTok?
Yes. The Congress, both on the national and local level, are a disaster. They are totally controlled by the Jews. So they passed another draconian bill in Florida. And I was in Florida, and I'm thinking, well, what exactly is the meaning? I gave a speech in Florida that probably was illegal. Nothing happened. I tweeted and was on the internet in Florida saying things that were probably illegal now. Nothing has happened. I don't think
Well,
it's going to happen. We have one of the one another straw in the wind is Ireland. Things are happening in Ireland. So I just today saw a tweet about the hate crimes bill is dead in Ireland. A week ago, Varadkar, the Indian homosexual who is the Taoiseach there, the prime minister, resigned because his party knows they're going to lose. A week before that, the referendum refused to change the term family in the constitution. Ireland is changing. There's absolutely no question about it. And I give credit to Gemma O'Doherty, courageous lady. I've been on her podcast many times. And she has persevered in the face of all sorts of persecution. But in many ways, Ireland was simple. I mean, I would go on her show and say, look, you're not white. If you say you're white, you're playing right into Leo Varadkar's hands. You're Catholic. And if you're not going to church, you're a bad Catholic. And if you're a bad Catholic, they're going to steal you. They're going to steal your country from you.
Well, that's what the Catholic Church warned in 1890, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So
and that was regarding France, but it was a similar observation. If you
same thing. But the difference is that they never had a French Revolution in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess not, because it's not France. But you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was no revolution. Actually, the revolution was Google, when Google and Big Pharma showed up. And I think to give the Irish people the benefit of the doubt, who knew?
Yeah, they were blind. I think they were blindsided with the abortion and the gay marriage referendum, weren't they?
Yeah, they were blindsided. It came earlier than that. It was the whole campaign about priestly pedophilia that hit them hard, because they're a priest-ridden society, and they did it because the priest said so. So they were weak in that regard. And then they had the Celtic Tiger, where they're all going to get rich by borrowing money.
Yes.
That's not the way to get rich. I guarantee you, you're not going to get rich anyway. So they that went flop. And then they had the whole sexual liberation thing. Sean Naughton, by the way, in the latest issue of Culture Wars, did an absolutely brilliant review of this guy, Graham, who was the guy, a big, you know, he was like the Owen Benjamin of Ireland, except that he had much more success in putting on this sitcom about one priest or something like that. And he was going flying high, and like Owen Benjamin, he drew a line and he said, I can't accept transgenderism. And he sank like a stone. At that point, they dumped him. But he did a memoir about what happened to him, and he talked about what happened to him in the 60s when he was but it's been later than the 60s. Basically, it was Jewish comedians promoting smut.
Mm-hmm.
And he got into had a bad habit of masturbation to pornography. And that's what did him in. And it wrecked his life. And now he doesn't even know, doesn't even understand what happened to him. I have to tell you an incident today. Rode my bike to Whole Foods. Pull up. There's a young guy standing there. He looks at me and says, you're E. Michael Jones, aren't you?
Yeah.
I said, yes. He said, I stopped watching porn because of you. And I tweeted this. I said, no wonder the Jews hate me.
Well, that's anti-Semitic.
It's anti-Semitic to say that. But
yes.
Hey, I know this is anti-Semitic.
But according to Rolling Stone, I'm just
a rabbi is the head of Pornhub.
Yes.
I know that's an anti-Semitic dog whistle trope, whatever, it's canard. But the fact is that pornography is Jewish from top to bottom, always has been, and is to this day. And that's why it's so important to the Jews, because they get to cripple healthy young men like this. And then when I come along and I say sexual liberation is a form of political control, sometimes that breaks the spell all by itself. Once you comprehend that sentence, a change takes place, because you thought it was freedom. And this guy didn't say he went into therapy or counseling. He just said, I stopped. That's the fight here. That's the fight here. And if you think you can do it without referring to Jews, you're going to fail. Because as Sun Tzu said, you have to know yourself, and you have to know, identify the enemy. And if you don't do that, you're going to lose every battle.
Well, yeah, I was watching a documentary on Fred Leuchter. He was the chemist, or sorry, he was the expert on gas chambers that was the expert witness on the Ernst Sundahl trial.
Yeah. Leuchter. Yeah.
Fred Leuchter, I'm sorry. He's from Massachusetts, I think.
Yeah.
Just for simply showing up, performing the test, and sharing his conclusions in that trial, his life was ruined.
Yeah.
His business was ruined. He was his marriage was broken up, and they tried to prosecute him for posing as an engineer. He never did that. It isn't even a law to that effect. One story told him where the state of Delaware refused to pay $7,000 that they owed him for the work he was doing. He would consult on making more humane execution system, gas chambers, electric chairs. There was a big problem with it. But he was, and the I think the name of the DA in Delaware was Silverman, and refused to pay him.
Yeah.
And his life was ruined. Gamar Rudolph, I think, was called in to back up, or I think Leuchter's research, because Leuchter did it kind of on a rush job. Yeah. So he went, Gamar Rudolph went as a chemist, you know, from the Max Planck Institute, did similar things. He provided the evidence to back up Ernst Sundahl's claim about the gas chamber narrative being false. His life was ruined. He went to jail for, I think, 4 years. His marriage was broken up, and his personal life is a wreck because of simply for telling the truth, or for sharing his research.
Yeah.
And they did interview, and this documentary is doing on Fred Leuchter. They interviewed some of these Jewish activists, and they said this man had the gall to show up, and he thought he could just go up and speak his mind. And well, we showed him.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I'm like, what?
Wait a minute, you forgot to say that Jews are in favor of free speech. Go back.
Yes, that, by the way, yeah, I think both Mr. Feldman and Ford brag about their advocacy for free speech.
Yeah, as long as it conforms to what they're
yeah.
going to say. No, this was, you know, these were heroic figures. Faurisson, by the way, this is all in John Beaumont's book, The Truth Will Set You Free, which is the case for revisionism. John and I originally set out to co-author a book, but our approaches are just too different. He's a lawyer and I'm a literary critic.
Yes, yeah. That's
it didn't fit together, so we brought out two books. But if you want all of the details, if you want the chemistry lesson, you want all that type of stuff, John Beaumont's book is available at fidelitypress.org. My book is The Holocaust Narrative, which is basically focusing on these artifacts, these literary artifacts that created this narrative and where it came from. So, yes, but the problem where is that the problem for these people is the truth is great and it will prevail. And there's no way you're going to satisfy the mind unless you tell the truth. Because the mind is not easy until it rests in the truth. So this is the Jewish strategy. You know, they've got billions and billions of dollars to control the mass media, and then nobody listens to mass media anymore. And then they spend more money to control the internet, and then nobody listens to them when they're failing. They're failing miserably.
Right. I mean, right. They clamped down. What was it, 2016, 2017, on the internet?
It was 19. Was the big.
It was a big cutoff. Well, that's 5 years ago, and there's more skepticism and criticism now than there was back then.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right, because they are not telling the truth, and they think Rabbi Shmuley is a guy who thinks that if he shouts enough, that you will believe him, and you can watch him shouting on various. If Rabbi Shmuley didn't exist, Hitler would have to invent him. No, even I think Alex Jones just told him, please shut up. You're doing more harm to the Jews than Adolf Hitler ever did. He's so obnoxious.
Did you see that Rabbi Barclay told Candace Owens that she asked him to define anti-Semitism? He says, well, it's ever changing. And she would not have it.
Yes. I don't know how they got away with it for so long.
It's ever changing, mean, so it fits whatever.
Whatever, it's like what words mean what I want them to mean. That's what the caterpillar said, didn't he, in Alice in Wonderland?
Yeah, that's so. It's like, you know, and Candace Owens says, if someone tells me can't define racism, then it's meaningless. So basically, what you're telling me is if that's ever changing. I mean, the purpose of a definition is to, you know, pin you down. What does this mean? And then they say it's ever changing. And even these articles, in Forbes article, you notice he's saying how it mutates throughout time and circumstance in every place. I'm like, what does that tell you?
It's you know, as Joe Sobran used to say, an anti-Semite used to be someone who didn't like Jews, and now it's someone Jews don't like.
Yeah.
So it's when you hear this term, you said something that some Jew doesn't like. Now, how does that fit into our Constitution as Americans, where we have freedom of speech and so on and so forth? It doesn't fit in. And so what we're realizing is that this group of people is incapable of representing the interest of the American people. They're completely incapable of doing this. If you ever needed proof, the Biden minion is proof, where you have Mayorkas representing the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society and flooding the border with people so that he can destroy the country. And when Josh Hawley asked him, calls him on the carpet, he said, all he can say is, I have relatives who died in the Holocaust. How much more do you need to say here? You got Merrick Garland going after Catholic pro-lifers, you know, telling them, sending the word from the top down to these local branches and saying, you know, we need to go after pro-lifers. Do the what's the freedom of access to clinic entrances?
Yeah.
Drag that up again.
Well, he's the one that, and Garland actually one that said when he was confronted. He was asked directly, "What do you have against Catholics?" And he said, "Because I'm Jewish, I cannot be accused of bigotry because I'm Jewish because of the Holocaust." He actually said that in so many words. My
Yeah.
background, I have relatives who almost died in the Holocaust, you know, whatever. And he goes, "How could you ever think I'd be guilty of such a thing?" He says, "What? So what you're saying is because you're Jewish, you can't be guilty of bigotry?" You know, okay.
You're guilty of anything if you're Jewish.
Yes. Yeah.
Can you remember a time when a Jew apologized? Can you has that ever happened? I can't think of one instance.
No, because they've never been at fault for anything.
They're always the
As
victim.
people, yeah.
Has any Jew apologized for the behavior of the Israelis in Gaza?
No, they rally around Israel the same way they rally around Leo Frank. And that's the problem.
This is a problem.
Yes.
Serious problem.
You know.
Because how are you supposed to have a meeting of the minds when you're always right and the other people are always wrong? And you can break off the conversation at any point you like simply by denouncing the person on the other side as an anti-Semite. This is not rational behavior. And God is allowing all of this to happen so that the scales will fall from the eyes of the Americans and see what they bought into now.
Well, the idea that Barclay, October 7th was the worst day in human history. I know. How about February 14th, 1945, Dresden? How about August 6th, 1945, Hiroshima? How about the Battle of the Somme? You know, how about, you know, I don't know, a natural disaster like Krakatoa? I don't know. It's like the solipsism and self-absorption and narcissism is just
Yeah, and then the condescension in dealing, obvious. Now Candace, like talking to the idiot child, you know. Now Candace,
Yes.
let me get this straight. And then he says something completely preposterous, like even if he attacks you, you're not allowed to attack him because you'll be an anti-Semite. Completely preposterous stuff, with an attitude of total condescension toward this idiot child who's not getting it. I mean, they have no self-awareness. It's stunning that you can be so self-absorbed and not understand the real message that you're conveying here. Like, Shmuley, don't you understand what you're doing? Don't you understand that you're making Jews look odious in everyone's eyes by your behavior? Isn't there a Jew out there who's going to take him aside and say, "Look, Shmuley, just shut up. Take a break."
I thought they were good at PR. I guess, I don't know, maybe they've lost their touch. I mean, that's some the years of.
We're not in the era of Eddie Bernays anymore.
No, I think maybe lack of adversity has made them, privilege makes you soft and lazy.
Yeah, because at some point, Jews stop doing anything. They don't do anything anymore. I mean, there was a time when you had to be a comedian or something, I mean, or you had to write a book, or you had to, figure out the universe or something like that. They don't do anything anymore. I mean, what do they do? I'm trying to think. What do they do other than complain?
I collect interest payments. I
Interest, yes.
don't know. Well, what did you think in this article? I remember he closed it out saying that I think I guess increases of an anti-Semitism results is sort of a prelude to national decline. And he cites countries that had bouts of anti-Semitism, and then it soon after the country collapsed or into revolution. He cited Russia. I said, well, wait a second. Who waged that revolution in Russia? No, but he's sometimes it's a sign of national decline if a country is has a consciousness or starts to criticize
Oh, no, look, the
their.
national decline, there's a fairly common trajectory here where countries move from manufacturing into finance. It's pretty common. And that's the decline. And that's the decline that has taken place in our country. I mean, it happened to Holland.
That's right.
Happened to the Medici. The Medicis did it without the Jews, but they made their money in cloth manufacture, and then they decided to go into banking. This move to financialization is the basically the sign of decline. And then invariably you have a country that's suddenly promoting sodomy and usury. David Hawkes just wrote an article about Jeremy Bentham. Bentham, and guess what? Bentham said that sodomy and usury were not wrong. And David, it's a good article, but wait a minute. There's a group that promotes sodomy and usury. Type in Jeremy Bentham and the Jews, and it turns out there's a literature talking about the fact that he was working with the Jews to overturn the social order. That was a crucial turning point. One of the important things that happened in England and the United States during the 18th century, it was called Methodism. And it led to a kind of moral reform in both England and the United States that started to expire by the end of the 19th century. Gertrude Himmelfarb has written a book, I think she wrote a book about it, or an article. That was Irving Kristol's wife. And it's a good article about basically the moral reform, because we're so used to decadence that we don't realize that there were periods of moral reform. And that Methodism was one of them, and it was a crucial moment. But when you allow Bentham to start saying that, oh, it's just prejudice that you're against sodomy and usury, no, you're doing the bidding of a group of people. And if you go down that way, which is of course what we've gone the road we've gone down, you will end up being destroyed. So that's the situation now. We have to pull out of this tailspin, and I think that the issue here is always the Jews always go after the top guy. In the Europe in the Middle Ages, they'd always go to the prince, and they would say to the prince, "We'll lend you money at 6%, whatever." As long as you let us charge the poor slobs at the bottom 43 and a third percent. And no prince could resist this. No prince could resist low interest rates. And they didn't. And so they got in, the prince would let them in. And this was which St. John Capuchin used the term Jewish privilege. It was a big problem in Bohemia and areas like that during the 14th century. 14th, 15th century. And he was preaching crusades against the Jews. And it basically meant that the prince would have to revoke Jewish privilege because the people are being ground into the dust by usury, and you're getting off with a lower interest rate. That's the problem here. They always go to the top guy, but they can't keep the masses under control. That doesn't work. And so they got the top guy, where the entire Congress is basically bought off by Jews, intimidated by Jews. But the people are becoming more and more angry because their interests are not being represented here. The biggest problem right now throughout the world is representative government. We don't have it. It has failed across the board, Europe, the United States. A classic example of a man who was interested in the welfare of his people was Muammar Gaddafi, and Hillary Clinton murdered him. So and the only guy who comes close, I think, in Europe at this point, representing his people, is Viktor Orban in Hungary.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, everyone else is a stooge of the oligarchs, and the Jews are a big part of the oligarchic power structure. Across the board, you can be a conservative as long as you accept Jewish hegemony over your culture. And so that's what Mrs. Maloney does and various other people.
Yeah, there's, I mean, the Jews, what they did was in America, they got the public to buy into liberalism, both large L and lowercase L, uppercase and lower L. And that's the ideology of most Jews, liberalism itself, because it's a system that's ripe for infiltration and takeover. But basically, it was based on the American people, at least believing that there's a good faith, a goodwill on their part. And there was nothing really being hidden from them that was really going on. No, conspiracies, if you will, or intrigues. But as we grow old, we get more experience. We know that in any political system, any society, any group claiming power, having power, should be open to criticism and scrutiny. If it isn't, there's a big problem. And Jews claim, because of anti-Semitism, to be immune from such scrutiny, but
right.
only a child, really, it's really childish to accept at face value what anyone in, what we hear from politicians or media people, intellectuals, anyone in media, anyone of power and influence. We should be skeptical, and of course, Jews certainly are in power. They have a lot of power, at the very least, if they're not controlling power. And they obviously, in pursuit of the power, they're going to engage in all types of intrigues and have ulterior motives. This is why this is why they got involved with civil rights, feminism, immigration rights, these things, the peace movement. These were all ulterior motives to advance their agenda, like the free speech movement and all that.
Right.
But then we're told we're paranoid if we're suspicious of their motives or their actions. But that's just the reality. That's the world we live in. We're supposed to be, as gentle as doves, but as wise as serpents, as Christians. And we have to acknowledge that's the reality of the world. There are certain machinations and realities of Jewish power. And now it's for all to see now. It's been exposed. And I don't know how anyone can look at the, follow current affairs, or just read the news feed and go, oh, and deny that what's really going on here. I mean, it's, they've taken over the economy and Wall Street, culture. Look what they've done with immigration law, and they're simply dissolving the country and driving the country over the cliff. You have massive debt, and over financialization, and it's under their tutelage that this has occurred.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the fundamental question. The fundamental question. I've said before, there was a time when there was an anti-Masonic party in the United States of America because that group posed a threat, and that the political parties have to deal with the realities of their time. And the main reality of our time is Jewish control of our culture and political system and financial system. And either we're addressing it or you're not in the game, or you're hiding out. You're hiding out in the woods with terms like conservative and liberal. Obsolete political terms that are not addressing the fundamental issues of our age. But that's changing now, and it's changing on Twitter and in the consciousness. Logos is rising. The consciousness is rising, And before it's rising really fast in Ireland. Maybe because it's a homogeneous Catholic population where they finally realized all I have to do is go back to church and everything will start heading in the other direction. I think they did it. The Irish did it. I said it when I was on Gemma's program. I think they start actually starting to do it, and they're waking up to the fact that they were cheated out of their patrimony by their own sinfulness. That's the great thing about the Catholic Church. It has sacramental confession, and you can use it, and you can say, "I'm sorry, I did something wrong." The Jews can't do that. Jews can't do that. They can't. They have to project their guilt onto other people, and they become more and more odious the more they do it. So that's sooner or later we have. There will be some great man who will step forward and articulate this in the political arena, and we'll end up erecting statues in his honor as the great liberator of the American people.
Will he be a leader?
He'll have to be a leader. Someone will have to mobilize. We have no leader, is it? First of all, the other thing,
What's the German word for
where does they find a leader?
It's just a word. What's it? I mean, this article, he says, well, when the Jews ran the Weimar Republic, it was a great a golden age of German culture. What are you talking about in that article before in the
Yeah, you mean
what are you talking about?
this is yeah, you mean Magnus Hirschfeld?
Yeah, or child prostitution, poverty, starving. I mean, it's like, there was a reaction to that. There was a bit of a reaction to the golden age of Jewish golden age in Weimar. So,
Sure.
okay, well, I think I had you for an hour. I think we covered it.
Yes.
So, like I said, I read the, I was real wasn't impressed with those articles. I was like, this is just typical self-serving Jew whining. I was like, geez.
Up with another plan here because this plan is not working. I've said it before, the groups like the ADL have this big, huge, powerful gun, but it's only got one bullet. They pull the trigger and they fire the bullet, and then what? What do? They throw the gun at you, and then that's it. That's it. And they're in that situation. Jonathan Greenblatt just basically admitted that they lost the Zoomer generation. They've lost them completely. The people like Nick Fuentes, that generation. They've lost them. So they're losing.
And so this isn't a moment for introspection. It's a moment for like more censorship, I guess, right?
It's double down. That's
It
the
does, yeah, exactly. It's like,
only it doesn't have a reverse gear.
no. And did you see that leaked tape? It was it from last year talking about I guess it was TikTok. And I think it was like is was it Iranian intelligence that got the tape, which is great. I think it's hilarious. But him talking about TikTok. And all of a sudden now we have this bipartisan move to save TikTok, to grab TikTok from the evil Chinese as if the Chinese are the problem.
Yeah.
So, well, Dr. Jones, thank you for coming back on the show.
Thank you, Tim. It's always a pleasure.
Of course, it's Culture Wars, right? CultureWars.com.
And for the books, it's fidelitypress.org. All the books that we were referenced here are available at fidelitypress.org. Don't go to Google unless you want to hear the ADL bad mouthing me.
What's the lead story in the April Culture Wars?
The April Culture Wars is we have the second part of the whole ethnic cleansing of the Germans.
Oh, okay.
We have my review of Immanuel Todt's book, La Défaite de l'Occident, says basically the American Empire is collapsing
Neoconservatives?
because the hidden grammar of America, the American Empire, is Protestantism, and Protestantism has evaporated. That's an interesting thesis, and I deal with it extensively because there's something to that. And that has led me into, I'm doing research now on American identity. I'm going to write a book about American identity.
Yeah, you covered that. I was reading a chapter in the Holocaust narrative, and you talk about Moby Dick and Americanism is Satanism. I thought that was very provocative, and but yeah.
To Milton, John Milton, the Puritan. Satan is the hero of Paradise Lost.
Yes.
Satan was the text of the Puritans. Anyway, it's an interesting idea.
Yes. And again, you're talking about the collapse of Protestantism, which is a 500-year, almost half a millennia, right? It's 500-year cycle kind of winding down.
The
And
question is, what is it? What is it? Is it the Bible? No, that's Catholic. The Protestants didn't create the Bible. The Catholics created the Bible. Well, what is it then? And I think the distillation of it is this satanic spirit of rebellion. That's what it was. I mean, the spirit of rebellion, that's in a sense what it meant to be an American. This kind of rebellious spirit that got distilled, it escaped from the Puritans. It became a kind of ethos. All sorts of aspects that need to be
Well,
explored.
it's almost follows along with the collapse of conservatism, the collapse of Americanism, the belief in America and the American experiment. As Catholics, if you really look into it, one is compelled to be somewhat ambivalent about America in the final analysis, right?
Well, I mean, Samuel Huntington wrote a book called Who Are We? And it came out right after 9/11. And he said to be an American is very simple. You have to be Anglo-Protestant. Well, what happens when that disappears? Which is what is happening. I mean, I think a guy like Tucker Carlson is a classic example. I think he's an Episcopalian, but if he is, he's an ironic Episcopalian. You know what I mean? He kind of winks at you when he says that, rolls his eyes.
Yeah, he's aware of it. Yeah, you can
He's
tell
aware
when.
of the parlous state of the Episcopal Church, but that's just an example of the evaporation of Protestantism that has taken place wherever it existed. Scandinavia is an example. It evaporated there. And so, you have a guy like Frode Midtjord, who was baptized a Lutheran, speaks Norwegian. He wakes up one day, the Lutheran Church has been disenfranchised, disestablished. So, what is he? Well, he thinks he's a white guy. This is the type of identity crisis that lots of people are going through, especially in Protestant countries like England. England's cr huge identity crisis right now.
Yeah, it's that type of alienation or atomization or I guess deracination that capitalism, which is a some would argue is a product of Protestantism, inevitably created and sets us up for it being exploited and taken over by Jews.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Trump is a people will say the word Protestant and nobody knows what it means. They invariably start talking about Max Weber and the spirit of Protestantism and so on and so forth. It's kind of idiosyncratic. But everybody jumped on it. Everybody thinks that's a definitive thing, and it's not. It's not. It's better to go to John Milton if you want to know what it is. That's what they brought to it. That was
Well,
the new spirit that they brought to it. It was the
better to reign in hell and serve in heaven, I guess.
better to reign in hell than serve in heaven.
Well, here we are.
Here we are. When Satan, in the middle of the speech, he's rallying the demons. In the middle of the speech, he says, "Here we have found a home." Well, that's what the Puritans said when they arrived in Massachusetts. Here we have found a home. We can be free. Free. Anyway, something else to think about.
Look forward to the article and the book. That'd be an interesting book.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye bye.